And it's also the appearance day of Srila Jiva Goswami. In his Laghu Bhagavatamrita, Srila Rupa Goswami describes Krishna as the original personality of Godhead, and also describes how all the different avatars are expanding from Krishna. Avatars and the expansions who rule the Vaikuntha planets, Krishna is the origin of all of them, and therefore he is the supreme manifestation of God. According to some Vaishnavas, we shouldn't make any distinction among the different forms of God, that they're all equal, there is no hierarchy, no one is more important than the other. In a sense, that is true. God is one, so how can one person, the same person, be better than himself? You know, God is always the same, because he's always the one and the same supreme person. But God manifests himself in different ways. His greatness is manifested, is shown in his different forms, in different ways, and to different degrees. So some incarnations are greater than others, in a sense that Krishna is showing himself more fully, more wonderfully, in certain of his incarnations, relatively speaking. And so Rupa Goswami does make an analysis of the various incarnations of Krishna, showing which ones are better than which ones are greatest. And he has, on the top of the grouping, he has chosen four of Krishna's incarnations as the greatest, or what he calls paravastha, in the topmost position. And if this four are Krishna, Ramachandra, Narasimha, and Vamanadeva. These four incarnations are considered the ones in which Krishna shows his greatness the most fully. He exhibits himself most fully. Lord Vamanadeva is on that list. He's considered greater than other incarnations, especially because he displays Krishna's beauty to a very great extent. Lord Vamanadeva is especially famous for his beauty. And with his beauty, as a young brahmachari, he attracted the attention of all the demigods, and he attracted Bali Maharaj, king of the demons, to offer him charity and to submit everything to him. It is not so common that Krishna incarnations are in as brahmanas. Usually he takes birth as a king, as a kshatriya, because the business of God's incarnation is to paritranaya sadhu nam vinashaya cha dushkritam, to protect the devotees, and to do that by killing demons. So this is the business of a kshatriya, killing business. Lord Vishnu usually appears with his weapons, and he uses them against the demons. It's most suitable that the Lord appears as in the kshatriya category in order to do this work. When he appears as a brahmana, then the situation is unusual. A brahmana is not supposed to commit violence. If he has to rectify the imbalance, the deviations from the principles of religion, if he has to subdue demons, he's going to have to do it non-violently. We are familiar with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He didn't commit violence. He almost used his Sudarshan Chakra against Jagai and Madai. But Lord Nityananda reminded him that his mission in this incarnation is non-violent. Similarly, Vamanadev is another non-violent Brahman incarnation of the Lord. He appeared as a... Vamana means dwarf, but also in colloquial Bengali, Vamana means Brahmana. It's, you know, it's a sort of disparaging or joking way to refer to a Brahmana, to call him Bhamana, which means dwarf. The other term is Vatu, a young Brahmachari. But he's under, you know, he's generally depicted as a dwarf, not only a small boy, but an unusually small boy. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when this is Narada, went on the advice of a devotee, just telling him that the demigods are actually the greatest devotees of Krishna. And among the demigods, Indra is the best devotee. And we know this because Krishna, in the form of Vamanadev, has agreed to take the role of his younger brother. And he lives always in Swarga Loka with Indradeva. And in the role of a younger brother, he's obedient to Indra, Upendra, Lord Vamanadev. When Narada approached Indra and tried to tell this to him, that this is why you are the greatest devotee, because the Lord has become your younger brother, submitted himself to you, Indra didn't accept that praise. He said, no. If Vamanadev actually accepted my devotion, if he actually considered me his devotee, why did he subject me to such humiliation? When my kingdom was usurped by Bali Maharaj, Indra is saying, the Lord Vishnu, instead of, in the proper fashion, coming with his weapons and his armies to kill the demons and in a chivalrous way win back the kingdom of heaven, instead he resorted to deception, to cheating. And for me, a kshatriya, Indra saying, this is a great embarrassment, that instead of fighting fairly to get the kingdom back, we had to cheat. This is the pastime of Vamanadev. Indra is saying that this proof that I'm not a very great devotee of the Lord, that he didn't defend me in a chivalrous way, but he came and played a trick in order to get back the kingdom of heaven. That's Indra's humility. Actually, it's the glory of Indra that Vamanadev appeared for his benefit. Chaturdasham Vamanakam Kritva Gad Advaram Balehe Pada Trayam Yachamana Pachitsus Tripishtapam. Vamanadev is the 14th in the list of 27 avatars that Suta Goswami speaks in the third chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam. He went to the sacrificial arena where Bali was performing a whole series of great sacrifices. And he begged just for 3 steps of land. But his intention was to benefit Indra by giving him back, by winning back the kingdom of heaven. That is his motivation. So this is to the glory of Indra that Krishna made an incarnation just to get back the kingdom of heaven for him. Actually, it was on the request of Aditi, the mother of the demigods. On the advice of her husband Kashyapa, she performed the Payovrata ceremony and got Vamanadev as her son, who was especially appearing just to fulfill this request of Aditi, to get back the kingdom of the demigods. Bali, as we mentioned, was especially attracted to Vamana's beauty. But his first principle was adherence to the truth. When he offered whatever you might like to the boy, a Brahman has appeared. A Brahman should be offered charity. Best if you just ask him what he wants and give it to him. So Bali Maharaj was ready to give anything, fulfill any request of Vamana. But Lord Vamanadeva said, I only want as much land as I can cover in three of my steps. And he was a very small boy. A small boy can hardly walk across this room in three steps. So Bali at first said, you sure you don't want to ask something better? It's foolish when you're offered anything you want to be satisfied with something very small. So don't be foolish, please. Change your mind. But Vamana said, no. If a man is greedy, then he cannot be satisfied with all the land in the universe. So all I want is three steps of land. I'll be satisfied with that. I'm not asking for any more or less. Bali Maharaj agreed, even on the threat of being cursed by his guru Shukracharya, who warned him, don't do this. This is Vishnu. He has come to cheat you, to steal away this Swargaloka and give it back to Indra and the demigods. Don't give him what he wants. But Bali Maharaj was intent on fulfilling his promise. He had already made his promise. And nothing, not even the order and the curse of his guru, would stop him. So he was cursed by his guru to go to hell, to lose all his assets, his kingdom and his opulence. His family became frustrated with him and were ready to reject him. And when he was unable to fulfill the promise, because Vamanadeva expanded himself to the size of the universal form and covered the whole universe in just two steps, Bali said, okay, you may put the third step on my head. But still Vamanadeva pretended not to be satisfied and complained that you have not fulfilled your promise. So Vamanadeva ordered the arrest of Bali, and he was bound up in the ropes of Varuna, the snake ropes. And he was ready to be cast into hell, as his guru had foreseen in his curse. But then he offered prayers to Vamanadeva and said, I am not afraid of going to hell. I'm not afraid of losing everything. I'm not afraid of being rejected and criticized by everybody. The one thing I'm afraid of is if I make my promise to a Brahmana and don't fulfill it. Untruthfulness is the one thing that I cannot, that terrifies me. So I'm very satisfied. I've done my duty. Do what you want to me. And then Vamanadeva replied that, yes, I'm very satisfied with you. You've passed this test. You refused to deviate from truthfulness. You refused to fail to fulfill your word. Even though your guru cursed you, even though you lost everything you had, even though your family rejected you, and even though you're about to be cast down into the lower regions, still, you will not deviate from your promise. And you're satisfied that you have done this. So Vamanadeva then blessed him. In the next Manvantara, you will become Indra again. You will defeat the next Indra, Indra Savarni is the Manu. In the Indra Savarni Manvantara, you will become Indra. You will defeat Purandara again and become the next Indra. in the eighth Manvantara. And in, until then, for the rest of this Manvantara, please you go to the Sutala Loka, the subterranean heavenly planet, that even the demigods envy the opulences and comforts of this place. You dwell there, and I will stay there with you as your doorkeeper. So Vamanadev gave him his blessings and sent him on his way with his family to Sutala Loka. Anyway, this is something of the pastimes of Lord Vamanadev, in which he attracts the surrender and devotion of all the demigods and of the king of the demons, Bali, who then became a great devotee. Today is also the appearance day of Srila Jiva Goswami, the greatest scholar, philosopher in our Gaudiya Vaishnav line. He has written the textbooks that are the basis of the purports that we're reading in Prabhupada's books. Srila Prabhupada's purports on the Bhagavatam are based on the commentaries of our acharyas, Srila Sridhar Swami, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, but especially on the Krama Sandarbha and the six Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami was born as the nephew, the son of the third brother of Rupa and Sanatan, Anupama, the third youngest brother. His son was Sri Jiva. So younger than the other Goswamis of Vrindavan. I think Raghunath Das was even younger than him, but he was the next to youngest. He did not join Rupa and Sanatan immediately in Vrindavan. He remained home on the order of his brothers, of his uncles. He remained home taking care of his elderly parents until they passed away. And then he went to Navadvip, where Lord Chaitanya had already passed away, but Lord Nityananda was there. Anyway, Lord Nityananda was there in Navadvip when Jiva Goswami, the young Jiva Goswami, who could not have been 16 years old, maybe 16, came to Navadvip. Lord Nityananda took him under his shelter and personally guided him in the Navadvip Dham Parikrama, as is recorded in the Bhakti Ritnakara of Narahari Chakravarti. And then Lord Nityananda gave Sri Jiva the order: you are a very intelligent boy, exceptionally brilliant, and you are very devoted to Radha and Krishna. Certainly you should go join your uncles Rupa and Sanatan and assist them with their work, their mission in Vrindavan. They have been ordered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly to uncover the hidden, lost places of Krishna's pastimes in Vrajadham and to write books explaining the secrets of pure devotional service to Krishna scientifically and poetically for the modern audience, the people of this age. To establish Krishna consciousness on a firm basis by writing books, textbooks, and literature. That is their mission. They require your help. But I'm asking you, Nityananda told Jiva Goswami, I want you first to go to Benares, the place of the Mayavadis, and get trained up completely as a pundit. You go there, study Shastras with the great pundits there. There are some Vaishnavas there. You don't have to study with Mayavadis. And then you go to Vrindavan, only after your education is finished. So that way Jiva Goswami followed the order of Nityananda Prabhu and became the most proficient and expert scholar in all fields of knowledge. And with that training and ability, he joined Rupa and Sanatan in Vrindavan, lived with them for many years as their younger companion. He helped edit their books Many of the books of Rupa and Sanatan were edited by Jiva Goswami, and books by Sanatan, other books also. And then he wrote many books himself. There's one pastime that a proud pundit came to Vrindavan with the intention of winning victory over all other scholars. And he heard that Rupa and Sanatan, especially Rupa Goswami, greatest scholar there. So he approached Rupa Goswami, asking him to engage in debate. But Rupa Goswami was not interested in such mundane quarreling. So he said, "Just you write up a note saying that I have lost the debate and that you are victorious. I'll sign the note. We don't have to waste time." And this was done. But Sri Jiva Goswami heard of this and was angry at the insult to his uncle, Rupa Goswami. And he wanted to defend the reputation of Sri Rupa. So he met this Digvijayi Pandit on the banks of the Jamuna when he was taking bath and challenged him, "You dare to claim victory over Sri Rupa Goswami. Now you have debate with me and see who is victorious." And Sri Jiva defeated very easily this pundit. And the pundit went away, ashamed. But Rupa Goswami, when he heard about that, he was not happy. And she told Jiva Goswami, "Better you go on the other side of the Jamuna. Go away from here." So in this way, he was exiled from Vrindavan's forest by over to the other side of the Jamuna, in Bilvavan. And there, Jiva Goswami, feeling very remorseful for angering his uncle, he took up residence in a crocodile's hole and practically fasted till death. He performed severe austerities and atonement for several weeks, even months. While he was there, wondering how he could redeem himself, he saw, by a strange chance, a piece of manuscript floating down the river. And he picked it up, and it was a description of Krishna's pastimes that inspired him to write on this topic. So he sat down and composed a very wonderful literature. Jiva Goswami is mostly known as a philosopher, writing textbooks like the Sandarbhas, very difficult scholarly works. But he was also a great poet and describer of Krishna's loving pastimes. So he sat down with this inspiration and wrote the Gopal Champu, elaborate, dramatic recitation in the South Indian form, Champu, in which pastimes of Krishna from his childhood up to his Madhurya Leela are described in great poetry. This is one of his major books. And the other main book that Jiva Goswami wrote, he wrote 400,000 shlokas in total, equal to the total size of all the Puranas. Several very important books. But the most important, beside the Gopal Champu, are the six Sandarbhas, which are his encyclopedic explanation of Srimad Bhagavatam. Most commentaries on the Bhagavatam follow a standard format of explaining each verse one by one. The commentator will write some explanation of the words and the meaning of each of the verse, verse after verse. But Jiva Goswami wrote in a different style, a special book, in which he explains systematically the topics, the subject matter of the Bhagavatam. And he did it in six different volumes, describing six different major topics in elaborate detail. First Sandarbha describes the nature of the Absolute Truth And more important, especially, how can we know the absolute truth? He discusses Vedic authority, that Shabda Praman is the only way to reliably know the absolute truth. But then he discusses how in Kali Yuga, the original Vedas are not easily accessible to all of us. They are difficult to understand in Kali Yuga. Therefore, we need to rely on the Itihasa and Purana. And among the Puranas, there is one that is the supreme perfect authority, Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this first Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami establishes the authority of the Bhagavatam. And then, having established how we can know the absolute truth through the Bhagavatam, then he starts referencing different statements in the Bhagavatam that describe the absolute truth. So the absolute truth is explained in general terms in the Tattva Sandarbha. In the second Sandarbha, everything that the Bhagavatam says about the idea of the personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, complete explanation of what the term Bhagavan means, with many, many, many different references in the Bhagavatam, all explained in great detail. The third Sandarbha explains how the absolute truth is the Paramatma, the supreme person who is in control of all his various energies, including the spiritual energy, the material energy, and the living entities. That is described in the third Sandarbha. The fourth Sandarbha establishes that the original absolute truth is Sri Krishna, according to the authority of various statements of the Bhagavatam. And that those four Sandarbhas explain Sambandha again. What is the absolute truth? And what is our relationship with him, theoretically? The remaining topics are of Vedanta, are Abhideya and Prayojana. What should one do to realize practically his relationship with God? What is the sadhana, the practice he should do? And then what perfection will he achieve by properly performing this sadhana? That is Prayojana, the third topic. So the Abhideya, or the sadhana, is described in the fifth Sandarbha, the Bhakti Sandarbha. The practice of sadhana bhakti, in all of its ramifications, is thoroughly explained in the Bhakti Sandarbha, the longest of the six Sandarbhas. And the last Sandarbha describes the Prayojana, the ultimate perfection of pure love of God, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. That's there in the sixth Sandarbha. So this encyclopedia of the Bhagavatam, the Sandarbhas, is the philosophical basis of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. It is the primary source on which Prabhupada based his Bhagavatam purports. If anybody wants to thoroughly understand Srimad Bhagavatam, he should study Srila Jiva Goswami's Sandarbhas. And if he doesn't have direct access to them, all he has to do is study Srila Prabhupada's purports, because there Prabhupada has distilled the essence of everything important that Srila Jiva Goswami has said. So here is a person who is one of the greatest intimate devotees of Krishna in the Madhurya Rasa, direct associate of Rupa and Sanatana and Raghunath Das. But he's taking the role of a philosopher defending the Siddhanta, the principles of philosophy. But he's doing it in order to direct the conditioned souls toward the lotus feet of Radha Krishna. It's the only purpose that Jiva Goswami has for being a scholar. He's first of all a devotee of Radha Krishna, maidservant of Srimati Radharani. And then in her service, he's taking the role of the great author and philosopher. Today is his appearance day. Hare Krishna. So anybody have any further comments? Yes, or questions?
Why did Sanatana Goswami chastise
Rupa Goswami?
Rupa Goswami chastised Guru Goswami for refuting the exact reason to chastise?
Well, we can't really, I don't want to guess. I don't want to try to imagine why Rupa Goswami does what he does. But it seems two things to show that if you actually want to serve Radha Krishna in Vrindavan, you have to have absolute humility. You can have no pride at all. So externally, he was chastising Jiva Goswami for showing pride to argue with that pundit. But that was external. More internally, he was giving Jiva Goswami the chance to become very intense in his mood of separation from Krishna. Yeah. It's not so easy to remain in Vrindavan. You can come there, but you can be kicked out also. So even Jiva Goswami was made the example that you have to have the blessings of your gurus and of Srimati Radharani, otherwise you may not remain in Vrindavan. And by being temporarily expelled, Jiva Goswami intensified his feelings of separation. It increased his devotion. Okay, so it was a test for him and a way to increase his devotion. Okay, yeah. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu. Okay, the question is, no, simply, why did Rupa Goswami punish Jiva Goswami by sending him outside of Vrindavan? Why did he do that? Okay, so, couldn't hear the question. Okay, is there anything else? Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Sri Vamana Dev and Srila Jiva Goswami.